Drive: The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Author: Daniel Pink. The Rise and Fall of Motivation 2.0. Societies have operating systems. The laws, social customs, and economic arrangements that we encounter each day sit atop a layer of instructions, protocols, and suppositions about how the world works. In our very early days, say 50,000 years ago, the underlying assumption about human behavior was simple and true. We were trying to survive. From roaming the savannah to gather food, to scrambling for the bushes when a saber-toothed tiger approached, that drive guided most of our behavior. Call this early operating system Motivation 1.0. It wasn't especially elegant, but it served us nicely. As humans formed more complex societies, bumping up against strangers and needing to cooperate in order to get things done, an operating system based purely on the biological drive was inadequate. We slowly replaced what we had with a version more compatible with how we'd begin working and living. At the core of this new and improved operating system was a revised and more accurate assumption. Humans are more than the sum of our biological urges. That first drive still mattered, but it didn't fully account for who we are. We also had a second drive to seek reward and avoid punishment more broadly. And it was from this insight that a new operating system, let's call it Motivation 2.0, arose. Three incompatibility problems. Motivation 2.0 still serves some purpose as well. It's just deeply unreliable. And understanding its defects will help determine which parts to keep and which to discard as we fashion an upgrade. The glitches fall into three broad categories that our current operating system has become far less compatible with, and at times, downright antagonistic to. First, how we organize what we do. The most powerful new business model of the 21st century is open source, like Wikipedia. It's a big movement out there that is not yet recognized as a movement. One reason could be that traditional businesses are profit maximizers, which square perfectly with Motivation 2.0. However, these new entities are purpose maximizers, which are unsuited to this older operating system because they flout its very principles. Second, how we think about what we do. The trouble for our purposes is that Motivation 2.0 assumes we're robotic wealth maximizers. Indeed, the very premise of extrinsic incentives is that we'll always respond rationally to them. But most economists don't believe that anymore. Sometimes these motivators work. Often, they don't. And many times, they inflict collateral damage. In short, the new way economists can think about what we do is hard to reconcile with Motivation 2.0. Third, how we do what we do. As organizations flatten, companies need people who are self-motivated. That forces many organizations to become more like Wikipedia. Nobody manages the Wikipedia people. Nobody sits around trying to figure out how to motivate them. That's why Wikipedia works. Routine, not-so-interesting jobs require direction. Non-routine, more interesting work depends on self-direction. Strategies for awakening your motivation. Although the world is awash in extrinsic motivators, there's a lot we can do to bring more autonomy, mastery, and purpose into our work life. Here are a few exercises to get you on the right track. 1. Give yourself a flow test. Set a reminder on your computer or mobile phone to go off at 40 random times a week. Each time your device beeps, write down what you're doing, how you're feeling, and whether you're in flow. Record your observations, look at the patterns, and consider the following questions. Which moments produced feelings of flow? Are certain times of day more flow-friendly than others? How might you increase the number of optimal experiences and reduce the moments when you felt disengaged or distracted? If you're having doubts about your job or career, what does this exercise tell you about your true source of intrinsic motivation? 2. Take a Sagmeister. Every 7 years, Stefan Sagmeister closes his graphic design shop, tells his clients he won't be back for a year, and goes off on a 365-day sabbatical. He uses the time to travel, to visit places he's never been, and to experiment with new projects. It sounds risky, but he says the ideas he generates during the year off often provide his income for the next 7 years. Taking a Sagmeister requires a fair bit of planning and saving, of course. The truth is that the idea is more realistic than many of us realize. 3. Move 5 steps closer to mastery. One key to his mastery is what psychology professor Anders Ericsson calls deliberate practice, a lifelong period of effort to improve performance in a specific domain. Deliberate practice isn't running a few miles each day or banging on the piano for 20 minutes each morning. It's much more purposeful, focused, and painful. Follow these steps over and over again for a decade, and you just might become a master. Remember that deliberate practice has one objective: improving performance. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Seek constant, critical feedback. Prepare for the process to be mentally and physically exhausting. 4. Create your own motivational poster. Thanks to a number of websites, you can create your own motivational posters. You can be as serious or silly with this exercise as you like. Motivation is deeply personal, and only you know what words or images will resonate with you. Strategies for improving your company, office, or group. Whether you're the CEO or the new intern, you can help create an engaging, productive workplace. Here are some ways to begin pulling your organization out of the past and into the brighter world of Motivation 3.0. 1. Conduct an autonomy audit. How much autonomy do people in your organization really have? If you're like most folks, you probably don't have a clue, but there's a way to find out. With an autonomy audit. Ask everyone in your department or on your team to respond to these 4 questions with a numerical ranking using a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 meaning almost done, and 10 meaning a huge amount. How much autonomy do you have over your tasks at work? How much autonomy do you have over your time at work? How much autonomy do you have over your team at work? How much autonomy do you have over your technique at work? Make sure all responses are anonymous. Then tabulate the results. What's the employee average? The figure will fall somewhere on a 40-point autonomy scale, with 0 being a North Korean prison and 40 being Woodstock. Compare that number to people's perceptions. Also calculate separate results for task, time, team, and technique. A healthy overall average can sometimes mask a problem in a particular area. 2. Take 3 steps towards giving up control. Extending people the freedom they need to do great work is usually wise, but it's not always easy. So if you're feeling the urge to control, here are 3 ways to begin letting go. For your own benefit and your team's. 1. Involve people in goal setting. 2. Use non-controlling language. 3. Hold office hours. 3. Play whose purpose is it anyway? This is another exercise designed to close the gap between perception and reality. Gather your team. Include everyone in your department. Hand everyone a blank 3x5-inch card. Then ask each person to write down his or her 1-sentence answer to the following question. What is our company's purpose? Collect the cards and read them aloud. What do they tell you? Are the answers similar? I.e., is everyone aligned along a common purpose? Or are they all over the place? Some people believe one thing, others something completely different. And still, others without even a guess. For all the talk about culture, alignment, and mission, most organizations do a pretty shabby job of assessing their aspect of their business. This simple inquiry can offer a glimpse into the soul of your enterprise.